Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Melina Rudman, who is the principal of Sage Coaching and Consulting. She is a spiritual director, avid gardener, and author of a soon-to-be-released book of gardening as a spiritual practice. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're here. So why don't you start out by telling us where you were born and why did God select the parents you were born to?
I was born right here in Hartford at St. Francis Hospital. I grew up in Middletown. Well, my dad was named Sebastian Salafia, and no one ever called him Sebi or Sebastian. He was Mike or Spike. My dad and I were kindred spirits. My dad grew up very poor in Middletown to parents that didn't speak English. They spoke Italian. And he always wanted to be a poet. My dad loved words, and instead my grandfather made him go to trade school and become a machinist.
Oh.
So my dad always used that artistic, poetic side of him in a love language with us kids. And so he was always sort of like Dr. Seuss, where he made up names for us that rhymed and silly rhymes and those kinds of things. He was also very much a gardener. He came from gardening stock. And as I said, I think, you know, he's sort of kindred spirits. My mom, her name was Teresa Galland before she married. She grew up very poor also in Fall River, Mass. My grandparents, Jenny and George, never went beyond third grade. They worked in the mills there. Never owned a home or a car, never learned to drive. My mom left Holy Ghost. She went to Holy Ghost College when she was a junior in high school to learn nursing and became a nurse.
Holy Ghost College, where was that located?
Cambridge. And she met my dad when she moved to Middletown to work at the Newington Children's Hospital. They met on a blind date and married 6 months later. 7 years later, I was born. I was the eldest, or the elder. I think that I got from my dad sort of my mystical side and my love of words and my love of nature. And I got from my mom my practical side. I'm very organized. I'm very good at getting things done. And my care of people, because she was a nurse all her life. Yeah.
And why did God select them for you?
I think as role models. You know, I could see what my dad loved and was never able to attain because of life circumstances. And I could see through my mom sort of the how to get there for myself.
And talk about your spiritual formation through childhood to adulthood.
I was always a spiritual kid. So from my earliest memories, I remember being in love with God and with Mary. I had a thing for Mary when I was little. And I just always knew stuff. I guess sort of intuitive too, which runs in my mother's family. It comes down through that line. My grandmother had the site, what the Irish would call the site, and my great-grandmother was a healer and also had that site, and my mom and Aunt Claire had it, and I have it, and my kids have it.
What is the site?
It's a sort of intuitive knowing about things, about an ability to pay. I think of it this way. It's a predilection, perhaps, to pay close enough attention to something that you can see what is needed and what might occur. It's a looking deeply into people and sort of sensing what's going on there. It's not a seeing of the future necessarily. It's more of a knowing, because you can see what is happening now.
And in your journey as a child, did you practice any particular religious context?
I was brought up Roman Catholic, loved going to catechism and, with some of the sisters, and not so much with some of the other sisters. And then when I was about 12, I sort of decided that maybe I didn't need God so much and put God in my back pocket until my... always reached out when I needed something, but not so actively involved. And then when I had my own children, I started in my early 20s, mid-20s, I started realizing that I had always had this connection and relationship and that it was time to pay attention to it again.
And so how did you cultivate that awakening to your spirituality?
Always by reading, because I'm a reader. And I started seeking a faith community that fit me well. And I would find communities that seemed to fit well for the time I was in. And but I never really stopped seeking. And right now I am not in a faith community, but I am very close to God, and I don't really feel the loss of it right now.
In the creation of your spiritual formation, you have been involved in servant leadership. Talk about that and how you've helped to form people through that practice.
That is some of the best work I've ever done in my life. So for 9 years, I ran a servant leadership school out of the Franciscan Center for Urban Ministry here in Hartford. I learned about servant leadership. So I'd always been a leader from the time I was little. I tell people quite honestly that when I was younger, I was probably a benevolent dictator. And then I went to work in the business world and always in a leadership position. Went to a really wonderful leadership training program that United Healthcare put on when I was there over at Rensselaer when it was here in Hartford with the Creative Learning Center for Creative Leadership. And it was great. It was comprehensive. And I came back to work so jazzed. And within 2 weeks, it was business as usual. And I realized I was really frustrated about that. And I realized after some contemplation that they'd given me a whole bunch of tools, but I was really no different than when I went in. And I realized that leadership, I didn't have the language for this yet, but I realized that leadership was not really something that you can be trained for. It's really something you need to be formed in. And I discovered servant leadership, and I started studying that, and then I created this servant leadership school there. And servant leadership is it's a way of leading that is very filled. It's filled with integrity and empowerment. It's very holistic, and it taps the deepest parts of people. It focuses on deep listening, on empathy, on healing, on intuition and vision, and followership, and transparency, and many other things.
Things that are so uncommon in this generation.
Absolutely. And yet so integral to leadership that empowers others to become their own best selves, to become fully human, perhaps. So I still strive to be a servant leader. It's a practice. It's like yoga, it's like prayer, it's like running, it's like whatever your practice is. Servant leadership is a practice, and you learn it, and you integrate it, and then it tests you, and you fall down, and you get up, and you try again. And hopefully, at the end of it, you come out knowing that you have done more good than harm in your days as a leader, however that is, with your family, with an institution, with an organization.
We're talking with Melina Rudman, principal of Sage Coaching and Consulting, and we'll be back after the break.
Like endless rain into a paper cup, they slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Change my world. nothing's gonna change my world. Across the universe, thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Suns, it calls me on and on across the universe.
and all the science I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week. A rocket
back. We're talking with Melina Rudman, principal of Sage Coaching and Consulting. And so along the way, you found the practice of spiritual direction. Talk about how you discovered it and its impact in your life.
I discovered it when someone told me I should go see a spiritual director, because I had quite a spiritual life, a very rich spiritual life, and I didn't even know about this. And so I went to the Spiritual Life Center, and I found a spiritual director. They connected me with a spiritual director. And I entered into this sacred relationship with someone who I could come to every month and for 1 hour sit prayerfully and share my story, share what was going on in my life, and who would ask me questions that helped me understand at a deeper level what I believed and how God, as I understood God, was acting in my life and in my prayer life. And I realized, too, that for all my life, people had come to me with their own stories. And that's sort of how you know that maybe you ought to become a spiritual director, is when people are naturally sharing that stuff with you anyway. So I started researching places that train spiritual directors, and I ended up down at Sacred Heart University. They don't have the program there anymore, but they used to have a 4-year formative program in spiritual direction. And so I entered into that program back, oh my goodness, I think it was in 2000, and went through the 4 years, really started to understand who I was. It's really formative programs are sort of like archaeological digs. They ask you to really dust off and go deep into who you are, not so much so that you can learn a specific technique of practice or of sitting with people, but so that you understand your own triggers and gifts, so that your ego doesn't get you in the way of your being present to someone else. And it was remarkable work. really good teachers, very fine teachers. And I've been a practicing spiritual director for 20 years now.
Explain for those who are listening, what is spiritual direction?
It is a sacred relationship, is the best way I can describe it, between someone who wants to learn more about who God is for them and how the Holy is working in their lives. It is not for a specific religion or denomination. It is for people of all faiths and humanists also who believe in the human spirit. And it generally works just the way my own practice has worked, where you find someone that is a good match for you at that time. You meet with them for about an hour a month, and it's very prayerful. You enter in, you can pray or just sit in silence. You can say anything, and you can trust your spiritual director that, you know, they are mandatory reporters. So if they are worried that you're going to hurt yourself or someone else, that is, they must report. But otherwise, everything you say is held confidentially and sacredly. And there, it's not therapy, because what the spiritual director will do will keep turning your attention to the Holy. So what is the movement of God in this? Or how are you praying around this particular thing? Or how are you being changed and formed by this life that, you know, that you are experiencing? If you hold this in the lens of God, however you know that, or the divine, however you know that.
How has spiritual direction created a skill set in your spiritual life?
It's created a skill set in my whole life, because the skills, it's very akin for me to servant leadership and to all the other work that I do, because the first thing is a deep listening to the movement of the Holy, to your own whatever, right? So sometimes it's your ego and sometimes it's your intuition, and you have to know the difference, and you have to be able to let one go and tune into the other, and to the one presenting. It also really has developed a quiet center in me, because to be in that relationship as the spiritual director, as the receiver of the story, you need to have space in you to hold it, and it needs to be a very quiet space. And it has also made me very attentive to what is needed in myself, which was a whole new thing for me, because I always put everyone else first. And in the relationship between the one who has come to talk, to share, and the one who is there because you've invoked the Holy, or you've made room for the Holy in this space. So I guess attentiveness and listening and spaciousness and empathy.
How has spiritual direction aided you in sacred listening to the divine?
I used to, when I first started practicing as a spiritual director, I would always listen for the divine, for the other that was there. And it sort of seeped into my own prayer time for me, you know, when I was alone with God. And because I'm an introvert, I'm alone with God a lot. So it really has... It's also, you know, as I said, I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was very, very comfortable with the transcendent God, which was always a bit of a safe distance for me. And becoming a spiritual director and practicing spiritual direction, I had to get comfortable with the immanent God, the God that is right here, right now, right in me and in you and in whoever I'm with and in everything. Because I've become a person who believes that God is in all things and all things are in God. And so not a pantheist, not a God of the rocks and a God of a sun God, but I don't believe that anything exists outside of God and that God is manifesting God's self in all things all the time. It makes everything holy. It makes me smile, and smiling, you probably hear it in my voice. That just amazes me. It makes me so glad.
We're talking with Melina Rudman, who is the principal of Sage Coaching and Consulting, and we'll be back after the break. You have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches. Thank you.
escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
Ooh. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy.
Cause I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low.
Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. To me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead.
Welcome back. We're here today talking with Melina Rudman, principal of Sage Coaching and Consulting. So in the last segment, we were talking about your journey with spiritual direction, and also you are an avid gardener. So talk about how gardening has become a spiritual practice for you and what you've discovered.
I have always loved outside and nature, and I have always wanted to garden and tried to garden and sometimes been successful when I was younger, and now it is just sort of woven into who I am. I think that when I feel that human beings have become detached from nature. We are human creatures. We are animals, that just like every other creature, except with our own knowing, and all of nature has a wisdom, because all of nature for me is an expression of God. And so when I first started gardening, it was very 1980s how you garden, and how I had learned from my dad. So, you know, things in straight rows, no weeds, nothing on the dirt except for dirt. And a battle, every year a battle against blight or insects or disease or whatever. And now I practice more regenerative gardening, because I think that the planet, there is no doubt that the planet is in trouble, and that it is up to us who have sort of created the trouble to help nature heal. And so I try to do that in my own little piece of earth in central Connecticut. And so I companion plant. I never spray anything. I probably drive my neighbors a little crazy, because I leave leaves under my trees and I leave the seed heads for the birds. And every summer I have fireflies and lots of birds and praying mantids and all kinds of life in my yard, and it just thrills me. I love seeing the bees bumble in my perennials, and I love watching the goldfinches come and eat the echinacea seeds, and I get a kick out of the squirrels eating the prickly chestnuts, and I love the little tiny purple teardrops of eggplant when they are babies, and the sweetness of tomato, and the raspberries that my granddaughter loves to pick and turn her whole face red with. The garden gives me life, and in return I give it life, and it feels like a sacred cycle to me. It has grounded me. When I first was seeing spiritual directors, I think the most common refrain I got was, "Melina, get into your body." And so gardening has grounded me. It has, I must be in my body, and my body must be rooted to the earth when I am gardening. And I just love it.
And what do you mean by rooted to the earth? A lot of people talk about earthing these days. So how does your connection to the earth impact you spiritually, physically, emotionally?
It reminds me that I am earth. You know, I am made of carbon and dust and stardust and all the things that the trees have made of. I had a chance to go to Devon, England, a couple summers ago, and I was at this place called Dartington Hall, which has been there since before the Normans invaded England in 1066. And there was a tree there in the graveyard that was more than 2,000 years old. And I could imagine how that tree was made of all the people buried beneath it. You know, how its roots had spread around their bones and buttons and had, you know, they were present in the tree now. I think that, you know, our human bodies are formed inside of other human bodies and then are placed in the earth in some form when our souls have put them down. And it's humbling, I guess. It grounds me so that I know that I am just part of this cycle, and I have just this limited time to learn and to love and to use my voice that God gave me.
You are in the midst now of developing a book that has been contracted by, what's the name of your press?
Anamkara Books.
So what is the book going to be focusing on?
It is focused on the lessons I have learned from the garden, and lessons of loss and gain and beauty and illness and death, and how it all works and how I am only a part of it all. It was a rough year last year. We had a lot of loss in our family. Writing helped me put it in context, and it helped me heal. And it gave me joy. And so the book is basically a series of essays and reflections with reflective questions for others who find them inspiring, I guess, about being a part. It's such a privilege to be alive right now, and in these troubling times, but also beautiful times, achingly beautiful times. And I hope that the book captures some of that and helps others not be afraid in these fearful times.
Your book was the product of some graduate studies that you conducted. Talk about how you use the book Essence through your dissertation.
The book is an expansion of my thesis. So the working title is Sacred Ground. I'm not sure that we're going to publish under that name yet, because it is expanding and growing. But I completed my MFA in creative nonfiction at Bay Path University in May, and most of the essays that were included in my thesis make up the body of the book. Some of them, you know, I lost my mom in January. There was a bit of writing in there about her, but it is not going into the book because I need more perspective, more time with that. But I have wanted to get this master's degree for many years, and finally my personal life opened up enough for me to do that. And took me a bit longer than I wanted, but I am I'm smiling again. I am very pleased that I completed that work and had such great teachers and such a great writing community to learn and to hone my craft so that I could really start using this voice that I have not used so fully, not so fully throated perhaps, until now.
So all of this work weaves into your SAGE coaching and consulting practice. Talk about how people could work with you.
I am accepting people, directees, spiritual direction, people who are interested in spiritual direction. I'm also, I've been a life coach and a business coach for a long time. Most of the coaching I do is around leadership. I'm proficient with the Enneagram also, and so a lot of self-awareness work, a lot of one-on-one servant leadership development, and also integrated life. I tried for many years to compartmentalize my life, and it wasn't good for me. I don't think it's good for anybody, and I think that the world needs all of each of us right now, and so my coaching works around that. I also lead retreats often at churches, retreat houses, and businesses, and I'm very happy to work with, I call it work for brave souls, because I like to go deep and I like to deal with what is really the crux of things. I don't do well with surface stuff, and most of us don't want to do that anyway. So if you're a brave soul and you would like to do some spiritual work or some integrated life work or are looking for someone to lead a retreat, please, please let me know. You can find me in Facebook, and I'm developing a website, Sage Consulting and Coaching.
Melina Rudman, thank you for your service in the world and the greater Hartford community.
Thank you.
I look at all the lonely people.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father Mackenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
Talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light. It split the night and touched the sound silence, and in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dared the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silence. Echo the wells of silence, and the people bowed and prayed to the neon.
on God they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispered.
Silence. 30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
You have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.